We're sitting with Guillaume from Hochulence Watches. Thank you, Guillaume, for doing this.
Thank you. Thank you.
I really appreciate it. So it's JCK 2014 for you. Is this your first JCK? Or?
Oh, no, I refuse to come to Vegas. This is my fifth one.
Okay.
I came fifth time. And it's always really a pleasure to come here.
Okay, good. And when, like, do you want to tell people how you started in the watch industry? Why watches? And what drove you to, you know, want to sort of pioneer your own brand?
Okay, so it's a big, big story that you want me to explain.
This Absolutely. Is,
since the beginning, in fact, I was not destined to do watches. My background was to do some product design. And when I was 12, I wanted to create things that I had in mind. That means inventing products, designing products, and making it real. And it was the first touch with the technical studies. So it was really exciting for me. At this time, the design studies was just at the beginning in Europe, linked to the car industry, automotive industry. But I wanted to do first the technical studies and after that the design. And my first job in the area of Lyon in France was linked to the computer aided design. And my boss one day sent me to the Rolex metallic strap manufacturer, which is called Geoffrey, that now they have integrated. And my job, my goal was to create the link between the aesthetic part of the 3D shapes and the technical contrast. So it was really the first step, the first touch with the industry. And after that, after 2 years, I was hired by Tag Heuer, where I spent 7 years of creativity, fun, because Tag is really a dynamic,
absolutely
creative brand.
But and what years are we talking right now?
Like it was Rolex from 1995 to 1997, and 1997 to 2004 with Tag Heuer.
Okay.
And in 2004, I decided to quit Tag Heuer and to launch Hochulence with a friend of mine. Motivated by many reasons, of course. First, entrepreneurship. I wanted to create my own company, my own business. But most important, I wanted to create something really new and unique in the watchmaking industry, starting to the point that at this time, every single brand was using the same movement from ETA with two hands,
yep,
and the chronograph from Valjoux.
7750s and 2892s
exactly
dominated the entire industry.
Entire industry.
Yeah.
And finally, to make the difference between a brand A and a brand B,
right,
you have sometimes George Clooney or sometimes Brad Pitt as an ambassador, and
right,
that's it. And
right,
the design was almost the same. So for me, it was a bit frustrating as a product designer, a product enthusiast, product lover. I wanted to animate the movement, to animate the way to display the time in another way. And just few independents was doing that at this time, but on their own name, Vianney Alter, Felix Baumgartner with Uhrwerk, a few genius at this
Absolutely.
Time, but not real with a brand vision, with a brand creative vision. So what I wanted to do was first not to put our own name in front of the scene. Guillaume Tétu brand sounds not good, and I'm not... I have no ego issue. I am a team player. I'm a sportive. I want to play in a team. And making a watch, you need 45 genius to make the watch.
Absolutely.
With you. What I wanted to do was to create a synergy between the creation, the design that we do in-house, and the talented people that we have around us. And everything is located in Neuchâtel. So that's why we have mixed the letters of Neuchâtel to create Hochulence name.
Oh, I see.
So this is an anagram
that's
to put them in front of the scene. This is really a team spirit, a team.
But what's interesting to me, Guillaume, is that when you look at Tag Heuer and you look at Rolex, the design language is pretty much the same. I mean, they're inspired by each other. It's very early 1950s Art Populux design, right? So, and there's a mold behind those two brands. It's very homogenized, if
mm-hmm.
you will, and it's probably so. You kind of created this brand that was like the anti Tag Heuer or the anti Rolex, right? Which is very interesting if you think about it, because those two brands, which are probably the two most powerful watch brands in the world even today,
yeah,
right? Number one Rolex and number two is Tag Heuer.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
Still, right?
Yeah.
You totally broke the mold and wanted to go way beyond that, because
yes,
they probably weren't pushing the envelope in a way in which you saw, right?
Yeah.
And the independents that were around were so, like, I mean, on the other extreme, probably, that you wanted to create something that was completely
This is exactly right. What we all want to do, that mean all the new industry of watch creators, because now we are a lot of players in that part of the industry, we are all motivated by breaking the rules, doing something really new, not following the tradition, but respecting the historical way to make a real proper watch with the finishing, with the respect of the supply chain. You need a lot of people to make it. Everything is pushed, and in a way that we are not really commercial brands. Of course, we need to sell at the end of the day because we need to pay the invoices. But the first motivation is to create something unique, because we know that at the end of the chain, we have some passionate people who want to share that passion with us. And this is the first motivation. When you are in a commercial brand producing hundred thousands watch a year, this is not the same motivation. This is more mass market. This is more mass production. So this is another world. So we are playing in another world. And this world is a world of creativity, passion. We are all artists in our style. And we are all friends as well. Because we know that we are a part of this new
generation. That's very important. What you just said is very important, because this industry is very, very competitive. And I've seen that, in the watch industry. Forget the watchmakers, because watchmakers are very special people. But when you look at brand presidents or you look at any of these people, they all talk with both sides of their mouth. And I think what's interesting for you guys being independent is that you all utilize probably the strengths of each other and are able to bounce ideas off each other without sort of competing with each other. Now, at the same time, I mean, do you feel like... You know, on one level, having an independent watch brand, you're not stuck to a mold and you have the freedom basically to do whatever you want. That must be completely liberating and freeing on one hand. But on the other hand, there must then lie a challenge, because nobody's heard of you for the most part. So you have to sort of market the brand. How do you market your brand? And who are the people buying your watches today?
Okay, it's a really interesting question, because you are right. Some people just make pieces because they want to have their own pieces.
Sure.
And finally, if you have no barriers at the end, you will die. So, as I said, at the end of the day, we need to sell. So how we do that? So this is a mix between sales and brand awareness. For the long term, and we have just now 10 years of history, so it's a young brand. It's already a good step for a young brand, but it's a young brand. 10 years is a good balance, because now we are well known by the connoisseurs, the collectors. They know that we are a brand.
A serious brand,
following the after-sale service, supplying good product, supplying some straps when you need a new strap, not telling you that this strap is no longer in production because we have suppressed this collection of the catalog.
Sure.
Which happens in the big brands. So we are really close to the market. We are close to the end consumer. So this is one part of the business which is linked to the personal relationship between the brand and the end consumer.
Right.
So this is an investment from me, from my team. I'm always on the market, always following the end consumer, listening to them. Sometimes I do bespoke watches for them because they want something unique. And this is one part of the business which is important, because you can touch the good wrist, which will become your own ambassadors. So I have a chance to know 150 end consumer who purchased Hautelange in the really beginning. We call that the Hautelange Owners Club. The way to animate that club was to offer them additional services, additional warranty years, some things to make confident, to create the confidence between the brand and us.
So you have to give them added values.
Exactly.
Now, are your warranties standard Swiss warranties, 2-year warranty?
No, we give first 3 years of warranty.
Okay.
Three. And we offer 3 additional years. That means 6 years for the owners club members.
And does that cover... like a standard warranty where it covers the movement only, or does it cover everything?
It covers everything, and we offer for the Owners Club member the first service. After 3 to 5
wow.
years, we offer the first service.
So it's very luxury experience in a sense.
Exactly.
This you is really want to work with the end consumer.
You know, for me, a luxury experience is not just putting a silk paper around a Chinese product. This is a little bit more deep relationship yes. between you and the customer, as we said before. So this part of the experience for my consumer is important. And the other part of your question is related to the marketing and the brand awareness. This is the other part that we are obliged to take care of now to see the fruits in 10 to 20 years.
Right.
And this is really important because to establish a brand, it will take time. We
yeah.
know that. 10 years is a minimum, 20 years is a good average, 30 years should be nice. So
yes.
that means we could say that the brand is established when I will die. And when the brand will survive to me and will have enough power on the market, on the distribution network to exist again. So I'm just the contributor to launch this brand because I'm the founder and I wanted to do something special. But again, putting the name of Outlands in front of the scene was not a one-man show. This is really a team building
experience.
So the market, we proceed in a simple way. First, as I'm a product guy, we have been working on a product. In the product marketing mix that you learn at school, you have 4P. Product, price, place, promotion.
Yeah.
Product was unique features. Price was $60,000 and more.
Yeah.
Just focus on collector database in Singapore and Russia.
Okay.
This is the six years of the history of Outlands.
Okay.
That was the market. After this first step, this first experience, we have think more deeply in the price positioning. That's why I came two years ago.
Scaled back down.
Exactly. With a new complete portfolio of products starting at 20, 20 to 30, 30 to 45, 60 and more, and of course 200 for the concept watches.
Yeah.
So now we have a price and product which is really consistent
okay.
in terms of portfolio and proposal for the retailers and for the end consumers. Promotion in place. Two important things. So the place, as I said, beginning in Russia and Southeast Asia. Europe is strong, but most of the time for Russian end consumers.
Yep.
And now we are continuing to work on the distribution side for the place. And the promotion is just starting now. That means after doing a lot on the product, so to establish the trust from the serious collectors in the world, now we can work with the new product line on a more general and global communication plan. So this is the...
Do you have your own... do you own your own distribution in other parts of the world, or do you have partners that you work with?
So sometimes we have partners, retailers or agent or distributors, but for example, with the group, because Outlands is part of the Mel group, the Mel family, Melan,
yep.
was Mr. Melan, Georges-Henri was the
former... Who came in 2012, right?
2012, exactly, joined the club. He took over the company and he took over Moser as well, H. Moser.
Yep. And he has an incredible lineage in the watch industry. I mean,
exactly.
He came from Audemars Piguet, and
he made the success of Audemars Piguet
between
more than 20 years.
Absolutely.
He was the CEO. He had a really excellent trust record, network, trustability on the market, trustability in the supply chain. So it was a really, really good step for the brand. And we decided to integrate the distribution in Asia with Melb Asia,
okay.
which is located in Hong Kong. Four people are working there to distribute the two brands and the other brands like the Betun. So we have Mother, the Betun, Outlands distributed from Hong Kong through the Melb Asia company. And we have launched Melb Taiwan as well with two people taking care of the distribution for
okay.
Taiwan, which is a specific market.
Sure.
Really important market. We'll perhaps have one in Singapore and let's say soon, I hope, in Miami to take care of the Americas. Why not? So this is a part of the plan of the group, in the group wise.
So you must, I mean, for you to give birth to this brand in 2004 as a concept and as a passion and as a way of kind of not being a traditional watchmaker, for you to see it come to this point, you must be very thrilled. I mean, obviously there's still a lot of work to do and you still have a lot to accomplish, but for you to see this now as a part of a major group with a collection of brands, including D. Bethune, which is one of my favorite brands in the world. And I believe is it also part of Arm & Strom? It's the same, or it's not the
group. We are just doing some synergy sometimes as independent need to do. So we have no shares, cross shares or anything else. We have just some relationship. The Bethune is just distribute through Melb Asia. It's a regular agreement.
Right.
There are just friendly relationship between the companies, but no link in terms of companies.
Now, would that partnership that you have with those, you know, being distributed by the same house, right? Yep. Would that, do you think, in the future, promote a collaboration in terms of, you know, a watchmaking combined effort collaboration?
Oh, so in terms of movement, the thing is, which is true, because now the two companies belong to the same owner, it's Moser and Outlands. For sure, we plan to do some industrial synergies, to use some components from Moser in Outlands movement, to do some movement with the other company, like the Bethune or some else who can come and join as a distribution ship. We have not planned to do industrial synergy yet, just friendly relationships. But for Moser and Outlands, of course, the link is evident. We can do something together because we are part of the same group.
Sure. And that's pretty cool, because I know, doesn't Moser make their own hairsprings,
yeah,
and stuff like that? So that's huge.
It's
for
strategic.
You guys.
It's strategic.
Completely
it's strategic.
Strategic.
And having that company, Precision Engineering, the name of the airspring production part of the holding, is something unique for us. So we use already the airspring from Moser in the HL2,
yep,
and we plan to use in the other next development and generation of movement. So it's really exciting.
Which takes me to, you know, you guys are known for that very, very cool machined-looking TV design, which I think was very revolutionary for its time and very revolutionary even now, because it's a very modern brand. But I was lucky enough in the last couple of days, being at the show myself and meeting you and getting to sit down with you, to see the new round collection you have, which is completely new for you, right?
It's a complete
departure from what you're known for.
It was a challenge because I always said since the beginning that to establish a brand, you don't have to stay with the same design. If you do that, you will be a monopoly brand. And I have many other brands that I can mention that they are known for one shape, and they cannot figure out without this shape. And this is a big issue at the end of the day. So my goal was really to establish a brand with few proposals. And one evidence in the collection was to have a round one. So to design the round collection was first linked to the design of the movement with the date. And the date is a disc, a circular disc jumping. So I said, okay, we had this TV screen shape linked to the connecting watch system.
Right.
Now we will move the movement, rebuild the movement to have the
around
date.
Around the,
and
yes.
And as the disc is circular, I have a complete explanation to make the round one with the disc linked to that. So the feature and shape are linked together. But it was a challenge to come with a round one. But finally, having a background of product designer and product lover, I can make the link in aesthetic approach to have a real family style in
yes,
each, if I can say,
yes,
in each product. So when you see an Outlands round or square or concept, or even the one with the support movement or the future one with the Dubai Aqua Chrono,
yes,
you will see the link between the design because behind there is one DNA which is really strong. Multi-layer dial, sapphires, transparency, floating figures, all those details, you can see the link between every collection. So the round one was a really big challenge, but finally when I see the answer on the market, I'm really proud to launch this collection like this, because people wanted to have a round one in the collection.
And what is that made out of? What is the case made out of? Just so people, because a lot of people may not even get to see it in the next, for another 6 months to a year, right?
Yeah.
So what is it made out of?
So we have decided in the reduction of the collection after delivering the first limited edition, I have decided first not to limit those collection avant-garde.
Okay.
So we have one avant-garde square and one avant-garde one. Regarding the two collection, we have always a titanium base case and back case, and we have some additional parts like the lugs, the bezel, or the bumpers, or additional parts which are in gold or in steel or in titanium.
Now, are those parts, the additional parts that you have, I mean, you mentioned soap rod movements and Dubois Duprat movements. I would think that those are the base movements that you use in most of your watches.
So we use for all the watches at $30,000 and more.
Yeah.
This is in-house movement.
In-house,
and
okay.
All the pieces from, let's say, $18,000 to $35,000,
yeah,
will use some external movement.
Okay.
So on those movements, I will just take the movement from the supplier and do a design of the dial, of the case, to have a link between the
different. So you don't really do anything to the movement then?
No, I will say like everyone. I will change the rotor, I will change the disc shape and
paint. That's about it.
That's like everyone.
Right.
That's it.
Of course.
That's it. So the main investment on those collections is on
the dials.
3D dials and the case.
Now, the parts of the watch, let's say the lugs or the bumpers or mm-hmm. whatever, is everything made in-house or do you supply everything?
No, yes, of course, you are right to mention that point. As I said at the beginning, Haute-Lance's name is an anagram of Neuchâtel because all the people making the watch are not in-house. They are independent workshops. So the team in Haute-Lance, we are 10 people. In my 10 people, I have one watchmaker, master watchmaker, doing the prototypes, the labo, test, reliability, engineer making the movement, design, conception, drawings, and the case and dial as well, supply chain, quality control, and watchmakers, and of course administrative and sales and marketing. So in this team of creative team, we design everything. That means we design the case, the screws, the movement parts, the color we want on the painting. Everything is designed in-house until we have the supply chain management, which is able to order that. But we don't produce anything. We have no tooling machine. We have nothing. This is a choice. We had in the past a few machines. It makes no sense. We have all the talented people around us in right. the Neuchâtel
So
area.
It's in the name, actually. It's all in the name. If you break down the name, it's all, master watch makers in Neuchâtel.
Exactly.
That are the best independents around.
Exactly. Now, so we have the best case maker. We have the best people to tool the movement components in the milling parts, in the turning parts. We have the best guys to do the manual angle. So everything is controlled and animated by my team. But we don't do that ourselves. So that means we are flexible, we can change. If we want to use a new material, we don't need to invest ourselves. We will do a partnership with the people to invest in carbon, in new titanium. So it's really, really a flexible way.
Now, does that mean because... And you don't make a lot of watches anyway. You make probably, 500 watches
this,
a year for
this
the
year
world?
We'll produce 450.
Okay.
You are right.
It's, so when you look at a company like Rolex or Tag that make close to 1 million watches a year for the mm-hmm. world... This isn't even 0.1% of their overall production.
Yeah, this is nothing.
And what people have to understand is a lot of people don't understand why the prices of watches are so high with independent watchmakers. This is exactly why people, because you're seeing an independent watchmaker who makes less than 500 watches a year for the world that's, you could say made to measure, bespoke almost. When you look at these watches, like... If I take, let's say, the watch you're wearing on your wrist, and I chose to buy that same watch, is there going to be, if I look at it with a loop, aesthetically, is it going to be exactly the same? Or because of the fact that you do source it from the different parts, there may be a little slight variance in the finishing?
In terms of quality control, we have some technical sheet, technical data that we need to
yep.
control. And we have the same design, the same finishing from one to the other one.
Okay.
So in the 28th execution of the HL2, you can say that you will have the same execution, except if we decided together with the customer to change something. For example, the color of the painting or things like this, but it will be decided together. But if you have a look on the market from one piece that you can find in Las Vegas or one in Taiwan, it will be the same.
It'll execution. Be the same.
Yeah, it will be the same.
Okay.
Because we have all the design, which is controlled through the manufacturer, the company. So that means we give exactly the same data. Even, I would say that I have one supplier which is not the same than 2 years ago.
Right.
I will ask the same quality and I will control the same piece.
I see.
So it will be the same.
Unless it's a bespoke piece where somebody wants a special engraving on the balance or something like that.
Yeah. But no, for the good point of the way we work is as we design everything in-house, we have all the technical data coming from our company. So that means we control and we know what we want to do, what we want to produce, which is, you need that if you want to produce outside. You really need that.
100%.
If you don't do that, you will always have the different pieces in your watches, and it should be a big disaster.
Because there's no continuity. But what about... being in the U.S., the U.S. is such a big market for the watch world. It normally accounts for at least 20% of the overall production for a lot of markets, for a lot of brands.
Yeah, it's not the case for us right now. To be honest with you, as I said, we were really strong since the beginning in Russia and South East Asia. that now we are starting again. But for us, the Americas is the line between Los Angeles to Miami and North Latin America. This okay. is really this Central America,
yeah.
the big Central America, which is the market right now. And this global market is roughly 20-25%. But USA itself, we need to do a lot now. We know that we have to improve the distribution in North America, close to New York, New Jersey, Chicago. We have nothing right now for two reasons. First, as I said, product and price
yep.
was closer to the taste of Russian and Singaporean
yep.
than to the possibility and capacity in terms of investment from North American. You said it's a big market, but it's not a big market for up to $6,000.
Right.
From 20 to 30, it's another story. That's why we come now. That's why it's a good moment for us now to come in US and to develop the market. So this is one of the priority for the next 2 years.
And what kind of dealers do you want to be in the US? I mean, I would think, obviously, this is a brand that's an independent brand. It's a boutique brand. It's a brand that not many people have heard of. It's a specialized brand. It's high-end. So I would think you want to be with more, you know, around brands that are independent, because you guys actually complement each other, right?
We need both. We need to have the beautiful windows. We are already in West Time in Los Angeles.
Yeah, that's huge, because they have everything.
They have everything. Yeah. So you have the chance to be in a beautiful point of sale
yeah.
with expert in that kind of pieces, but you are the 64 swatch brand.
Yeah.
So this is the reality. So we need both. We need that kind of point of sale for the image and for the knowledge of the retail staff, because they are really professionals. But we need as well some smaller retail shop,
right.
which are angry and we want to fight. And
like Cellini in New York?
Cellini in New York. We are discussing with them. So we hope we can start soon with them. And some smaller than that. We need as well some people who have the big boys.
Who may have like five brands in their store.
Five brands store. And not, I would say not Cartier, not Rolex. So they right. need to fight to pay the monthly bills. So, and this is a good challenge for them. And they like most of the time to have our kind of brand, because, of course, nobody will come in the shop to say, I would like the last Outlands that I have seen in Robiport, because
right.
we are not investing a lot in advertising right now. So right. we are developing, as I said, this is the new challenge for us to do.
Well, that leads me to my question of, you know, a lot of these retailers have a challenge of paying their bills with the big brands.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of, you know, I used to be in retail for over 30 years. I know exactly how it works. You know, when you have Rolex paying half your bills, and then you have an independent brand like Hochelaus, and you're like, I wonder what bill I should pay now first. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously, yeah. the one that feeds me or the one that gives me a little bit of business.
This is why we have a chance to come with a new product line, a new product portfolio with new prices. And now this is a question of relationship between us and the retailer. If the retailer put the watch on the tray when a customer who owns already all the big boys, AP, Hublot, or whatever, and you put an Outlands on the tray, you will say, oh, man, this is something unique. I have never seen that on the wrist of my friends.
Right.
So I will jump to that.
Right.
If the retailer don't do that, he don't put on the tray, he will always sell the same thing. So this is the challenge we have now, is to give a chance to the product to be shown. Because when we show the product, it's so different, it's so unique,
it's
so exciting that people love it. But now this is a team.
To get to the point, though, where the retailer, it is unique, it is different, and it is totally, you know, something unlike anything else in the world. But how do you, you know, get to the point of convincing the retailer to make that investment? You know, when there's so many other brands he may have, or so many other things he may have to, that come as a priority.
The thing is quite easy, in fact. As you said, we produce so few quantities of watches that they take that as a unique proposal,
opportunity.
And they know the customer who are enthusiastic to have something new and fresh and different.
Right.
So those retailers, they know that. They have perhaps in mind 10 to 15 of the database of customers who can afford it, who can love it, and they will do perhaps a try by a collector dinner to present the brand. Okay, what do you think about this? If they do sell, they will be happy, they will be enthusiastic, they will carry the brand. So we can help them in that way. Other one, they just trust in the product for the long term. They say, okay, we will try with you, but we will not sell anything in 2 years, but let's try. So we have that kind of partners.
Plus, if you think about it too, it's like, you're making under 500 units for the world. I mean, even if you have 40 dealers worldwide, that's like 10 pieces per dealer.
Exactly.
If they're lucky,
yeah,
they may get that. Right?
Yeah, and we have some retailer in Asia who will do 20 or 30, and some in USA they will do 3 or 5. That's
right.
Life. That's
right.
That's
right.
Life. This is
right.
The reality of the,
right.
The market right now.
Okay.
This is the balance is completely not.
even
in the same figures.
Because if you think about it, each dealer on average is going to get 10% of the overall production for the world.
Exact.
You know, who can say that?
No, exact. This is true, and this is why we need to have a selection of the retailers, which is really a focus on the partnership for the long term. They need to be part of the story.
Absolutely. They need to work with you in unison.
Yeah.
Yeah, and believe in what
you're
doing.
And to tell what they like, what they don't like, what we can improve. We need to work together. And for sure, it's not easy to sell an Atlas watch. It's tough. It's not easy like the big players. But when they start to enter in that world, they are really happy because the service we provide is unique. The quality of the product and the look of the product is unique. So when people want to have something different, the end consumer are really happy to carry the Atlas.
And now, do you, with your U.S. dealers, you know, the U.S. is so image-driven, you know,
yeah.
So social media-driven. Are you making the strides with social media? You know, it's funny, I mean, you know, I've been in the watch industry probably 30 years, and, you know, I've blogged for almost 8 to 10 years, and I started doing videos 4 to 5 years ago. When I started doing videos, nobody was doing videos, you know. Now I see every major watch brand doing videos.
Yeah.
Obviously, they're embracing the fact that social media is the normality because you're reaching a bigger population. You're reaching the world on a much broader scale without making the investment of putting hundreds of thousands of dollars. Anyone today can have a YouTube channel and upload a video for free.
For sure. And the balance we have to find with that kind of media, because, as you said, we touch a lot of people, but there are no customers in that database.
Right.
So the thing is, we need to talk on the social media, we need to use the social media to get the brand awareness and to keep the confidence, because the big collector who want to have a unique product, he need to have the feedback from the guys speaking on the forums, writing on the blogs, because he will say, okay, if this guy speak about this one, that means it's serious. So we need to play that. But we don't touch, we know that we don't touch with YouTube, with Facebook, with everything. We don't touch our final customer. They don't care about this.
Right.
But they care about the image or the feedback they can receive from this community.
Of course.
So this kind of marketing is different.
It's a very fine line, too, because I think what happens is a lot of these guys who are on the forums and, you know, who check out the same YouTube video day after day and masturbate to it every day, and they're like, I want a Hochelanz, but I'll never be able to afford it, and we'll probably call Switzerland and drive you guys crazy. Those, as much as those guys are annoying, those are the guys that spread the word to the guy that may have the money, that may say, hey, you just bought a $40,000 Rolex last week. What about this?
No, the policy we have is simple. We make a lot of visits. All the people who want to come to visit us are welcome. And we did a lot with the French forums. They are enthusiastic. It's close. They take the train from Paris, and they come to visit us. We know that we will not sell any watch with them. But it's not a waste of time, because if they're happy, if they understand what we do, they will talk to the friends, they will talk to the blogs, they will talk to the forums. And finally, the brand image will be better. So for us, it's okay. We are really okay to invest time, to spend time, to answer to the phone calls every time. So my marketing manager had a quite big part of her job to take care of all the inquiries, all the visits that we can do to
explain. How many visits do you... How many... Like, you know, that's an interesting point. You know, would you... If somebody, let's say, bought, do you ever deal with the end consumer directly, or are you open to that? If somebody called Hochelanz and said, you know, we want to buy a watch directly from you.
No, we don't do direct sales now. We do just for friends and family, in fact. So what we do, we welcome the owners. If you just purchase an Atlas and you said, I want to visit, or I would love to purchase an Atlas and I want to visit and to understand how you do, we welcome. but we have not the financial capacity, we have not the terminal of payment, we are not a retailer, right. And this is not our job. So right. We have a network, we play the game with the network. But the thing is, for the brand image, most of the collectors from the forums, they will not collect Outlands watches, but they want to understand the world. They will speak about Outlands, so we welcome them. And the collectors who owns or who want to own the Outlands are welcome as well. When I come back in Switzerland this week, I will have a Saturday lunch with three owners of Outlands. They come, they want to visit the company, so they came Friday afternoon, they will visit, and Saturday at lunchtime, we will have a beautiful lakeside seafood, and we'll enjoy time together. Because they love that part, and they will become ambassadors of the brand. So this is really important for me.
So a lot of it has to be relationship building on a one-on-one basis.
Exactly. For the collectors who want to be part of the story, who want to, for the three guys I will spend time with next Saturday, two of them have a bespoke watch with the birthday or the name of the kids. This is the kind of thing that they have requested. And I will spend time with them. And next time they are from Dubai. Next time I will go to Dubai, we have a cigar together. They will bring some friends. It's another brand awareness. It's another way to promote our brands. We need that. But of course, for the big figures, for the future, for the long-term building, we need the advertising, we need the retailer, co-op advertising,
we need everything. You need a lot of money behind it. Step by step. You've got to take it one day at a time, which leads me now to partnerships, you mm-hmm. know. I know that, you know, former Manchester United player Eric Cantona is now part of the team as of May, right? He just became a part of, or the ambassador, or I don't know if his official
we'll
role.
We'll call him a contributor. Because it should be more than an ambassador, yeah.
A contributor. He's an interesting guy because he's a former footballer for arguably the biggest football team in the world, Manchester United.
And he was
United.
Called the king at this time.
And he was called the king at the time. He's an actor, he's a producer as well.
And he's an artist.
He's an artist who's, you know, in Europe, he's a very interesting guy because he's also a very controversial guy.
Yeah, and he's a living god in Asia.
Right. So that's got to be really interesting for you. Rather than taking the approach of, oh, I'm just going to get some random celebrity that, you know, America has heard of.
Yeah.
You're kind of globalizing the brand more with getting this guy that has all these...
The week of Eric Cantona, if we speak about him in a few minutes, is that he's not well-known in the USA. So,
right.
Of course, we'll have to find the Eric Cantona from USA in another part of the communication we want to do. But the thing for Eric Cantona is the same from the brand for the way to display the time. We don't want to do the same thing than the other one. Doing a media plan like, again, the big brands, we know how to do it. We need to put 25 million on the table, and we'll be in all the magazines. And that's it. This is mass market.
Right.
We are not in perfume, we are not fashion, we are not in that. So what we want to do is to have another angle. And the angle we have with Eric Cantona is to make him part of the creation team because he's a collector of painting,
of art,
contemporary art. And what I want is to do a real link in the limited edition that we will launch with him and his sensitivity in terms of art. So the goal is to have a link between some piece of art and the watches he will design with us.
I see.
And it will be another angle that nobody used in the past. The fact that he's well-known, we will, of course, use his face in the advertising because it's helpful for the brand awareness. The angle of communication behind that is linked to the design. And this is why he came to us, because he will really be part of the brand building and he will not just be a man on a picture.
Right.
So this is really a partnership. We have a really good relationship together. He's a clever, smart, nice. I never seen such a... he's like a living god. I have spent time with him. I never seen him say no for a picture or for a shake-in. He's really a nice person. So this is exactly the value we have, the human value we have in Outlands. We can feel it with that gentleman. And this is really good for us because having that big name as a partner, it will be really helpful for the visibility.
But also, if you think about it too, like I like the fact that you said he's a contributor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you ask watch brands about partnerships they have, it's always like, you know, there's always a separation between the brand and the person that's that, but he's actually part of the team. He's, you know, in the sense that he's contributing to the awareness of the brand, not just on a social level, but on a technical level as
Exactly. He came 2 days in Switzerland to understand how we make the watches, to visit the suppliers, the case supplier, how we mold the gold, how we do the manual finishing and everything. He was amazed and surprised the complexity of all the craftsmanship, all the people working on the watch, and we spent time to design the first watches together. So it was really exciting for my team, it was exciting for me, and it was a real job together. It was not just taking two pictures and bye-bye. So this is something different, really.
Now, do you think that, you know, eventually, like right now you don't make ladies' watches, right?
We did some mother of pearl and diamonds, but to be honest with you, this is not easy for us because the price is so expensive. When you produce just 10 ladies' watch a year, it makes no sense. So what I decided to do is when I will be ready to design a dedicated watch for women, I will go ahead. But now I'm not ready.
I think also your brand is interesting. The TV concept is interesting because, you know, unlike a traditional round or a traditional rectangular, the TV shape is it really hugs the wrist, so it can be worn by men or women. And women are today wearing more technical watches.
This is what I wanted to say. Most of the watch we sold for ladies are men's watch, and we have a lot of ladies wearing our watches because, as you said, it's not so big. It's fitting the wrist in a good way. It's ergonomic. So I have few ladies wearing the watch already in the world.
That's
not
great.
Specific dedicated mother of pearl and diamond. I have, of course, done few pieces like this, but the most important thing is that some ladies wear the regular watch.
Absolutely. Now, who do you look at for inspiration? What brands do you like? Like when you look at, you know, the inspiration.
I will be clear with you. When I started, I had two fans in my mind. I'm in love with what did Urwerk since the beginning, and I like Vianney Alter. This is my two living gods. So Felix Baumgartner and Vianney Alter are for me two of the main people who inspired me to do the job in Atlas.
That's pretty cool, and I'm sure you now have relationships with them.
Of course, I enjoy to have sometime lunch or dinner with Vianney Alter. We have always a good time together, and with Felix, we try to catch us sometime on the market in Mexico. It's tough to have him because he's always in his workshop and traveling not a lot, and we have our own business to run, but we always have a good time when we spend a few minutes together.
That's cool. And like, you know, I mean, you know, wrapping up the interview, what would you say today to somebody who, you know, is an aspiring watchmaker who wants to get into watchmaking, who wants to approach the watch industry with one of the most competitive markets in the world?
I would say run.
As fast as you can.
Run, get back, and don't turn back. Run, run, run. Now, I have a funny story if you want me to go deeply on this. I know really well the couple creating a Revelation watch, Anouk and Olivier. And they asked me a few things since the beginning, that as they asked to Max Busser, as they asked to us, we are kind of big brothers for those new creators, because we have already 10 years of history. And
it's like Vianney.
For me, I asked a few things to Vianney, or I had some advice from Felix, so it's always
it's
good
same,
to have
the
big
thing.
Brothers to help you. Yeah. So when Anouk came to me and asked me a few things regarding the production side, I said, oh, but you should go to this place, or be careful with this one. You have always some few advice to share. Of course, it's nice to help each other. And after 4 years, she came back to me and she said, now my watch is working. We have spent a lot of money, spent a lot of time. It was so tough, but now we are so happy the watch is working. We are really happy. Can you help me for the distribution? And I say, if you think it was tough to produce, good luck to you for the other part. It's just a private joke, but it's really the way it happens, because it's so, it's a complex world.
It's really a complex world.
And the distribution specifically, we can feel the pressure from the big brands because they want more space, they want more sales, they want, because this is, as I said, more linked to the mass market and the figures. But we know that at the end of the day, we have a database of collectors in the world who want to have something unique, who want to have something different, who don't care about the brand, finally. They don't just want to be comfortable with the history, the service they will have, and the fact that they will be part of an artist club. And this is more what we are doing, all the independents. So for the collectors I know, they don't care about the brand name. They don't care about six. They want to know me.
Yep.
They want to purchase a beautiful product.
That's
they want to be sure the service will be okay.
That's right.
And they will do the same with Urvec. They will do the same with Revelation, with other one. They will collect because they love and they understand.
That's the beauty about, I think, being an independent. They can buy a watch anywhere, but they can't buy you just anywhere, which is a difference.
Exactly.
Guillaume, thank you so much. I really applaud your spirit, your passion, your love for watchmaking. And I appreciate you letting me do this today. And I hope one day to visit you in Switzerland and get to see it myself.
Exactly. Live. You are invited and more than welcome. We will spend time together.
You're very kind. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, there you have it, folks. That was my one-on-one interview with Hochelin's watch founder, Guillaume Tatou. It's very rare you get to meet these people in person. They're so far removed from the mainstream. And I'd really like to thank Guillaume for his time, especially during a very busy JCK 2014, and I hope you enjoyed the interview, so thank you, Guillaume. I'd also like to thank Shalboy Music and DJ Flipside for providing the musical tracks to this podcast. If you want to know what's going on with me and the watch industry, you can log on to my website at www.amitdevhonda.com. You can also sign up for my free newsletter, which will get delivered straight to your inbox every week. And you can also follow me on my Instagram, my Twitter, and my Facebook. And until we meet again, rock on and fly back.